welcome to Symphony Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. I'll be reading all of the program notes from the classical music series of the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2017 and 2018 season. The notes I am reading today are for performances by the North Carolina Symphony on Friday, November 3rd at 12 noon and also at 8 p.m. and on Saturday at 8 p.m. all at Maymandy Concert Hall, Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts in Raleigh. The conductor for these performances will be Marcella Leninger, and the featured soloist will be pianist Simon Trepcheski. The program for these performances will include the following. The North Carolina Symphony will come out on the stage to perform Moxie, a composition by Raleigh native Kristen Custer. That will be followed by Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto No. 1, featuring pianist Simon Trepcheski. And finally, the program concludes with Dvorak's cheerful Symphony No. 8. Now I'll begin reading program notes. First, some information about our guest conductor. Brazilian-born Marcello Leninger was appointed music director of the Grand Rapids Symphony in 2016. He served as music director of the New West Symphony in Los Angeles, for which the League of American Orchestras awarded him the Helen H. Thompson Award for Emerging Music Directors, and has served the Boston Symphony Orchestra as assistant and associate conductor. As a guest conductor, Leninger's recent debuts include symphonies of Sydney, Melbourne, Colorado, Hawaii, and Toledo, as well as return engagements with the Brazilian Symphony Orchestra, the Slovenian Philharmonic, and the Bard Orchestra, the orchestra of his alma mater. In 2007 and 2008, Leninger served as music advisor of the Youth Orchestra of the Americas, composed of 120 musicians from more than 20 countries. He conducted YOA concerts on tour in Argentina, Brazil, and Uruguay. An alumnus of the National Conducting Institute, Leninger was awarded the first Felix Mendelssohn Bartholdy's scholarship in 2008. He holds a master's degree from the Conductors Institute at Bard College. A dual citizen of Brazil and Germany, Marcello Leninger is the son of German violinist Eric Leninger and Brazilian pianist Sonia Goulart. Now our next guest for this evening's performance is Macedonian pianist Simon Trepcheski. Trepcheski is a frequent soloist with orchestras across Europe and in Asia and Australia. In North America, he has performed with the New York Philharmonic, the Los Angeles Philharmonic, the Philadelphia Orchestra, and the Cleveland Orchestra, among many others. Trepcheski's first recital recording received both the Editor's Choice and Debut Album Awards at the Gramophone Awards in 2002. Recent recordings include piano concertos by Tchaikovsky and Prokofiev with the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra. Born in the Republic of Macedonia in 1979, Trepcheski has won prizes in international piano competitions in the United Kingdom, Italy, and the Czech Republic. From 2001 to 2003, he was a member of the BBC New Generation Artists, and in 2003, he was honored with the Young Artist Award by the Royal Philharmonic Society. With the support of Kulturop, Macedonia's leading cultural and arts organization, and the Ministry of Culture of the Republic of Macedonia, Trepcheski works regularly with young musicians. In 2009, he was honored with the Presidential Order of Merit for Macedonia, and in 2011, he was awarded the first-ever title National Artist of the Republic of Macedonia. Simon Trepcheski is a graduate of the School of Music at the University of St. Cyril and at St. Methodius in Skopje, Macedonia. He lives with his family in Skopje. The first work to be performed by the North Carolina Symphony is Moxie by Kristen Custer. Custer was born in 1973 in Raleigh, North Carolina. Moxie was composed in 2015, and the first performance was February 22, 2016, by the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, Marin Alsop conducting. Now here's the overview. Kristen Custer was born in Raleigh and grew up in Boulder, Colorado. She received a doctorate in musical arts from the University of Michigan and is currently an associate professor of composition at the University of Michigan. Custer composed Moxie in 2015, one of 10 works commissioned for the 2016 centenary of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. It was composed as a tribute to the orchestra's conductor, Marin Alsop. Now here's what to listen for. Custer underlies her work with a rhythmic figure for the cellos and basses, over which she creates energetic syncopated melodies for the various sections and soloists. The combination of rhythms provides the constant energy of this piece. The instrumentation for Moxie is as follows: piccolo, flute, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, four horns, three trumpets, three trombones, tuba, timpani, percussion, and strings. The next work to be performed by the North Carolina Symphony is the Piano Concerto No. 1 in B-flat minor, Opus 23, by Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky. Born May 7, 1840, in Votkinsk, Russia, Tchaikovsky died November 6, 1893, in St. Petersburg. The work was composed in 1874, and the first performance was October 25, 1875, in Boston. Hans von Bülow was the pianist. Benjamin Lang was the conductor. Now here is the overview. It is ironic that Tchaikovsky's two most popular works, the first piano concerto and the violin concerto, were initially rejected by the greatest virtuosi of his country as unplayable fiascos. And I'm quoting here, utterly worthless, absolutely unplayable. Certain passages are so commonplace and awkward that they could not be improved, and the piece as a whole was bad, trivial, and vulgar. And that's a quote in the verdict of Nikolai Rubinstein, the first director of the Moscow Conservatory, and one of Tchaikovsky's mentors, on hearing the composer play his new piano concerto on Christmas Eve in 1874. The tirade raised Tchaikovsky's hackles, and he refused to change a single note, although in later editions he made some minor modifications. But with Rubinstein's negative opinion, he had little chance of mounting a respectable performance or receiving unbiased reception in Russia. What has come to the most popular piano concerto by Russia's most popular composer was premiered in Boston in 1875 with a pickup orchestra and famed pianist Hans von Bülow, where it was a smashing success. It is worth remembering that the first piano concerto came relatively early in Tchaikovsky's career. Rubinstein had served both as a mentor and first employer to the young composer. Moreover, Tchaikovsky's well-known bouts of depression and sense of alienation because of his homosexuality exacerbated his self-doubts about the quality of his music. It was a personal triumph, therefore, that he managed to withstand Rubinstein's vicious assault. Now here's what to listen for. Although the majestic introduction has become so well known as to be recognizable, even to people unfamiliar with classical music, it was revolutionary for its time. It remains unlike any standard introduction in the orchestral repertory, replete with a fully developed theme and a cadenza. Introduced by a soft chordal transition, the exposition begins with a melody Tchaikovsky allegedly heard a blind beggar sing at a country fair, but this theme, too, is hardly touched on again. The two following themes, one for the winds, the other for the strings, become more important for the movement as a whole. The long cadenza is unusually restrained, a fine vehicle for highlighting the pianist's control of pianissimo. The second movement opens with a gentle theme on the flute, accompanied by muted strings. The theme is then taken up by the piano with just a single note change. Instead of maintaining the tempo for the middle section of the slow movement, Tchaikovsky quixotically launches into a cadenza of pianistic pyrotechnics as a lead-in to a melody based on a popular cabaret song of the time. In the Rondo finale, Tchaikovsky again uses a folk tune in triple meter, but with the accent always on the second beat. As momentum toward the climax builds, the violins sneak in a hint of the main theme of the first movement. In place of a formal solo cadenza, an excited coda with lavish pianistic flourishes concludes the concerto. It is probably fair to ask why this concerto is such a popular competition piece. In keeping with the composer's tumultuous emotional life, it requires of the performer a mastery of just about every artistic and technical resource. Rapid passages in octaves, abrupt changes in mood, delicate passages of arpeggiated filigree, giant buildups of harmonic and emotional tension, whispered legato pianissimos. Is it any wonder Rubinstein overreacted? The instrumentation for this piece is, for solo piano, two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, four horns, two trumpets, three trombones, timpani, and strings. And the final work to be performed by the North Carolina Symphony on this concert is the Symphony No. 8 in G Major, Opus 88, by Antonín Dvořák. Dvořák was born September 8, 1841, near Prague, and he died May 1, 1904, also in Prague. The work was composed in 1889, and the first performance was February 2, 1890, in Prague, conducted by the composer himself. Now here is the overview. Given his place as one of the foremost composers of the 19th century, Antonín Dvořák was something of a late bloomer, but not for want of musical talent and promise. Dvořák's father was a butcher and had expected his son to go into the family trade. Only after his uncle had agreed to finance the boy's musical education was he able to follow his passion for music. Trained as a church organist, his first job was as a performer, playing principal viola in Prague's new provincial theater orchestra. During this time, he practiced composition, producing songs, symphonies, and entire operas, but achieved no recognition until he was in his 30s. Now, after winning national prizes for several years in the 1870s, however, his work came to the attention of Johannes Brahms, who gave him his first real break. The older composer, whose reputation was at its height, promoted Dvořák to his own publisher, Simrock, who in turn offered Dvořák his first commission, the Opus 46 set of Slavonic Dances. Brahms and the music critic Eduard Hanslick urged him to move to Vienna, but Dvořák's love for his native soil kept him in Prague. Like his older nationalist compatriot Bedřich Smetana, he freely incorporated folk elements into his music. Utilizing characteristic peasant rhythms and melodic motives, but never actually quoting entire folk melodies. Dvořák was never happier than when he could work in a simple rural environment with its Czech language and customs. It was in such surroundings that in a white heat he composed the Symphony No. 8 in 1889. He began sketching it on August 26th, finished the orchestration on November 8th, and premiered it in Prague in February of the following year. More than his other symphonies, it reflects his love for his native culture. It is the most national of his 9 symphonies. By the time he composed the 8th symphony, Dvořák was well known and respected, but he nevertheless had problems publishing it. Simrock now saw quicker profits in short piano pieces, more Slavonic dances, chamber music, and songs, and offering a trifling sum for the symphony. As a result, it was known for a long time as Dvorak's English Symphony because it was published by London's Novello, who paid the composer handsomely. Now here's what to listen for. The symphony constantly shifts between the major and minor modes. It opens in G minor with a solemn introduction for cellos and the lower winds, not unlike a funeral march. This contrasts with the cheery flute melody like a bird song that dominates the movement. Although the solemn introduction reappears twice, once unchanged and the second time brighter, with the full orchestra and in a higher register. The slow movement, the longest and most complex of the four, creates tension, both musical and emotional. The long opening, sometimes discursive, sometimes halting, consists of numerous motivic fragments that are later developed throughout the movement, including another bird call heard first in the flute and oboe, resolving finally into the movement's single, full-fledged melody. However, Dvorak does not linger on the sunny optimism of this melody, returning to the more passionate, tonally unstable material in which he further develops his expansive collection of motivic ideas. After several more mood swings, including a passionate climax in the brasses, it is the bird call, perhaps representing the calming power of nature, that has the final say. The scherzo of the third movement is a sad, waltz-like peasant dance with a nostalgic woodwind melody. The lovely trio, a gentle waltz, is also used for the coda, but at double the tempo, a device Brahms had used in his second symphony. The finale opens with a trumpet fanfare theme. It is transformed into a slow dance tune in the lower strings that undergoes a series of variations. A lively transformation of the main theme, including a resounding trill for the entire horn section, serves as a refrain. The instrumentation for this work is as follows: a piccolo, two flutes, two oboes, English horn, two clarinets, two bassoons, four horns, two trumpets, three trombones, tuba, timpani, and strings. These program notes were written for the North Carolina Symphony and copyrighted in 2017 by Joseph and Elizabeth Kahn. You have been listening to Symphony Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. We will be reading all of the program notes for the classical music series of the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2017 and 2018 season. I'm George Douglas. I sincerely hope that this listening to the symphony notes of the North Carolina Symphony will enhance your enjoyment of your North Carolina Symphony. Goodbye until next time.